guys. Welcome back to another night of Beyond the Veil with your host, Lisa Lamrock. And tonight we have with us extreme horror author, Tim Miller. Tim, thanks for Christy, did we have you on tonight?
Yeah, I came in.
Awesome. We have Christy, co-host, and Tim Miller. Tim, Christy originally had a lot going on and wasn't going to join us, but buzzed in last minute. Awesome to have both of you on.
Oh, cool, thank you.
I'm good that way.
Welcome, Tim. Tim, I've got so many questions to hit you with. I'm sure there's probably a lot of people that have questions in chat too. But, and you probably get this one a lot, but when did you like first realize I want to write and I want this to be my career?
It's hard to say. I mean, I've always been writing ever since I was a kid, like even in like first grade and stuff. It was one of the only few things that I was good at. So like the teacher would give us like a little, we'd read a story in class, you know, like a little, more a little book in reading class, whatever. The teacher'd say, okay, well, write your own story about this. And my stories are always, the teacher would like read them in front of the other classes and read them to the other kids or whatever, because mine were always more, you know, whatever. I don't know what I did. I was in first grade. Who knows? But, you know, it just became a hobby. It was something I always had fun with. I liked the idea that I could just – I grew up in a small town, and there wasn't really much of anything to do or happening. So I liked the idea that I could – you know, I used to read a lot of adventure books and stuff. So the idea that I could just, you know, make up my own stuff as I went. You know, when I got into junior high, you know, late elementary school, early junior high, you know, we didn't have computers and smartphones and any of that stuff back then. So, you know, I'd go to the library and, you know, sit there on their typewriter and just type like little short stories on their typewriter at the library. And I remember there was one time I was maybe 11 or 12. I was like 12 or 13. I wasn't a great typist. I was just kind of hunting and pecking as best I could. But, I had like this crowd of people sitting around me, is like this other kids and their parents. They were like really mesmerized that I'm sitting there just writing this story, because they all thought I was working on some school paper, and I'm like, no, I'm just writing a story. And they're like, what is it? And I can't remember. I think it was like an Indiana Jones story that I was making up or whatever. And they were just fascinated. I'm just sitting there making it up off the top of my head as I went along or whatever. So a bunch of them wanted to read it. So one dad, he took a couple dollars, because it's like 10 cents a copy, and went and made a bunch of copies for people. So that was kind of my first published experience, I guess, if you want to call it that. So, you know, that was just that. And then as I got older, I started getting, you know, further into junior high and high school, I started getting more into horror. You know, I always, like I said, was always writing notes. Some stuff I would have gotten in trouble for today, like in one of our classes. You know, we read a story about Davy Crockett. This was like, I think, my sophomore year in high school. And the teacher said, okay, everybody write your own story about Davy Crockett. So everybody wrote these, like, Davy Crockett stories, whatever. I wrote a story where Davy Crockett was out hunting, and he got shot in the head by a sniper and fell out of the boat, died, but then came out of the water as some kind of flesh-eating zombie. And you had to use the name of your classmates in the story. Had your classmates be characters. They stopped doing it after my story, because he went around and pretty much killed all the classmates. I think one girl I strangled with her own intestines. Another guy, I think I ripped his head off and drowned him in his own lung fluid or something. Just all, and it was kind of funny because the other people, well, a couple of people, I let somebody read part of it as I was working on it. And so everybody else was like, oh, how am I going to die? How am I going to die? And they all wanted to get killed in my story, which was funny. So nowadays it had to be like hauled off to some, you know, home for budding sociopaths or something. So I don't know whatever the hell they think out about that kind of thing now. So that was that. When I was in the Marine Corps, you know, I was overseas a lot. I walked around with a notebook a lot of times. That was just kind of my stress relief. Besides getting drunk on the weekends was, you know, I wanted to get one lot to do. We didn't have the internet and stuff. And so in the Marines, and there was no wars going on at the time. So you're either training and doing stuff and you're really busy, or you've got a ton of downtime where you're just sitting around staring at the wall. So I always kept a paperback. I always, you know, we trained with these tanks. I drove these tanks that go in the water. They're called amphibious assault vehicles, or AAVs. And so in my coveralls, like our Nomex suits we wear, they have all these pockets you'd zip up in. I'd always have like a paperback in there with a Ziploc baggie wrapped around it. In one pocket, but I have a notebook in another Ziploc with, you know, my pen and stuff in another pocket. So, you know, I can sit and read 1 minute, and then if I got bored with that. I could write some notes or write some stories or whatever, you know, come up with ideas or stuff. All this was by hand. I'd handwrite everything out. My handwriting's terrible, so I couldn't even read half of what I wrote later on if I wanted to read it. Got out of the Marine Corps. I fumbled around. I did some writing for a while. I did self-publish a couple books in the early, like 2000 and 2001, kind of like crime fiction suspense. Back then, e-books weren't a thing, so to self-publish, it cost a lot of money. Even using print-on-demand, I still used the print-on-demand. That was brand new at the time. Amazon wasn't even putting those books on Amazon at the time, so I was just doing like local book signings at some little coffee shops and stuff and selling books out of there. Some of the little self-publishing companies I was using had gone out of business or they got sold or whatever, and so I ended up just letting them go out of print because I got busy. You know, by this point I was married, and then we had a kid, and then I started going back to school. When our daughter was born, I was working two jobs for a while. So just, you know, life just sort of happened. And so for almost 10 years, I didn't write anything hardly at all. I was blogging a little bit when MySpace came around. I'd blog on there, and then I went to school part-time. So a lot of my writing energy was spent working on school papers and things. And then I opened a business for a cell phone store. So once again, didn't really have time. I think in the midst of there, I did stop and start a few stories, but I felt like it was crap. And so I ended up tossing them. So I think one book I got about 15,000-20,000 words into, and I gave up on it. And I was like, this is horrible. And I threw it away. And then,
how long does it take to write a book?
Well, that depends. And that's where, you know, I was kind of circling around to that here. So that was all that. And when we moved to Texas, and then I was with my ex, and you know, we just split up and everything. I kind of started getting the itch to write again. I had a lot of time alone. I was under a lot of stress. And so I just kind of started playing around with a story idea that had been bugging me about a preacher that was a serial killer. And so I ended up writing The Hand of God out of that. That took me about a year, and that was about my process at the time. It would take about a year to do it. And that's around working a full-time job. So, you know, some days you just don't feel like coming home and writing. So I did that book, and I self-published it. And Amazon was, you know, doing e-books and all that and everything. Didn't do so great. And then I just kept doing it. I eventually lost my job due to some health reasons and stuff about a year or two later. I got remarried and everything. So I had a lot of time when I was off, so I just started writing books. And eventually now, you know, I've kind of worked out a system where I can get a book out about every 4 to 6 weeks. I can finish a book in about 4 weeks and then have it published and ready to go, or have it edited and ready to go in about 6 weeks or so. By the time I had my fifth or sixth book completed, people kind of started finding me, I guess, and then my books were starting to sell pretty regularly, and it was to a point where, and I've been able to maintain it, it's kind of grown a little bit, and, you know, I'm not rich by any stretch. People always think that you're a professional writer, and they think, oh, like Stephen King. Well, no, he's worth $400 million. I probably make a little more than I made at my last full-time job. For what I do, that's pretty good. I'm happy with that. I mean, I want to see it keep growing and keep building it, so I have, you know, give myself some cushion and stuff. But you know, that's a good run I'm having right now, just being able to do that.
Well, it helps.
How many
books
are you up to?
I couldn't hear you both.
Go ahead, Chrissy.
I said it helps a whole lot when you're doing something that you have such a passion for. Sometimes really and truly the money doesn't really matter, you know, as long as you're provided for and you're doing what you love.
Well, yes and no. I mean, during the stretch there before my books started really moving, I mean, there was about a year and a half during that time, and I still wasn't able to find a job. I think I took a few jobs here and there, but they paid so little and the hours were ridiculous. Some of them I just quit because I'm like, it's just not worth it for what they want me to do. I was driving for Uber part-time. I was doing some freelance work here and there that, you know, that I could do just to bring money in. I might have been getting a few $100 at the time in royalties or whatever, but, you know, people that kind of say that, I've heard people tell me that, oh, you shouldn't write for them. Well, I mean, if that's your goal, if you have a job that you like and a career you're happy with and you want to do writing for fun and whatever, but if you're looking at it as a business or a career, because during that window of time, that year and a half, 2 year stretch, we had two cars repossessed about a month apart from each other. You know, we'd had to apply for food stamps. I went to court twice, almost getting thrown in jail for being behind on child support. So when I, now that things are going well, kind of what keeps me driven now, you know, I would never wish going through that again on anyone, not even my worst enemy. Well, maybe my worst enemy. I can think of that. But, but you know what I mean? Because people see how I'm doing. They're like, oh, wow, I'm going to get into that. I'm just like, you know, I didn't just wake up and start doing this. I went through, I mean, that was a complete living hell during that time. I mean, I can't even, the idea of depression and not knowing, and people, you know, and it's not that, like, I was refusing a job. It's just there wasn't a lot of jobs out there. I mean, I'm driving for Uber, making a couple $100 a week doing that, and I'm doing some other stuff, or I could get a part-time job that's just going to pay a tiny bit more, or even a full-time job, but the pay was so low, you know, with double the hours, that's going to pay another $100 more a week than I was making just piecing stuff together on my own. You kind of see what I'm saying there? That's kind of what the economy was like here for during that time. So we just kind of toughed it out, and, you know, I was hoping that something would kick loose, and I actually did go back. I did get a full-time job that paid halfway decent, selling cars. It's just about 3 weeks into that job is when my book Country Club started going crazy with sales, and I sold like 1,200 books that first month, you know. And so I was like, the following month when the sales went up again, I was like, okay, well, I'm gonna leave this job then, because it was just, I mean, it paid okay, but I was like, if I could go home and be home and market and promote and then work on another book, then I could, you know, have something going. And so that's kind of, you know, yes, I do love it. And it is my passion that, you know, that's what I want to do and everything. But at the same time, I look at where I am now and I look back during that dark time and I never, ever forget that. And that's what keeps me always pushing forward is so, because I know some authors I've seen, they do really well and they have some books that sell and they kind of start getting kind of full of themselves and they start, you know, they don't publish as often, or the stuff they publish isn't as good, or they start doing these just really weird things. And, you know, I see that and I'm like, if that's what they want to do, that's great. But then sometimes I've known a few authors who've done that and then their sales just completely tank and then they lose fans and then everything is kind of a mess. And then they're in disarray. You know, I don't ever want to go back to where I was before. So my whole thing is just constant forward progress, you know, while at the same time remembering what got me here. I know, extreme horror, I've seen some authors, because it's got a really loyal fan base. The fans of extreme horror are great. It's tough to find good extreme horror, even as I'm a fan myself. So, you know, in the past year or so, it's just been flooded with new books. A lot of it's not very good. And it's not that the books themselves maybe not be any good. It's just the term extreme is subjective. So I'll read a book, they'll say, you know, warning, this book is extremely the most violent, terrifying book in the entire world. Have a nurse standing by, you know, all these other crazy stuff. And then I read it, and I'm kind of like, that's it. I was waiting for something really gory to happen. I was waiting for someone to get, like, their asshole ripped out and stuffed over their head or, you know, something in this. And, you know, to me, what I think of as extreme and what I put in my books. So when fans, you know, and I really don't pull a lot of punches in my books, so fans, they really do enjoy my books. Because that loyal fan base, I've seen a lot of authors who they'll go extreme, build up a fan base, and then they'll move on and start going into more mainstream horror or crime thrillers or maybe even erotica. You know what I mean? It's like they use it as a stepping stone to get a fan base, and then they go on to do something different. I'm not going to speak for other people's intentions, but I don't ever see myself doing that. I mean, I do branch out. Sometimes I do, like I did My Brother's Keeper, which was more of a psychological horror. I did one young adult story because I have a teenage daughter that couldn't read my book, so I wrote a book kind of for her that she could read. Right now I'm working on a science fiction book, but it's sci-fi, extreme sci-fi horror. It's basically like one of my regular books set in space with aliens and stuff, but there's all sorts of guts and gore and all that. So that's kind of my thing, is remembering what got me to where I'm at right now, keeping in mind where I want to be, but staying loyal to my audience and to those folks that have supported me and that have gotten me here, you know, and to kind of keep. I try to avoid what they call, like, the formulaic stuff, because I know a lot of times people think, well, I wrote this kind of a book and that sold really well, so I'm just going to write a bunch of books just like this one. You know, I try not to do that. I know in extreme it does sometimes seem repetitive, because when you're writing stories about people being tortured and killed, there's kind of only so many things you can do to a human body and keep it seem new. So I kind of try to rotate things around, but that's why I occasionally do sort of the one-off type stories, or come up with different scenarios or whatever to keep it crazy. So so that's kind of, I know it's kind of a long roundabout answer, but that's kind of my thought when people say, well, it's your passion, money doesn't matter. It's like, well, for me it does, because this is my livelihood. So I mean, I realize I'm not going to be super rich, and I don't, I mean, that's fine. I'm not greedy. I don't need to be rich. I said, but you know, I would like to have enough to where you know, we can be comfortable. I'm not living, you know, royalty check to royalty check, you know, and maybe even where I can, you know, have some additional money to help support other writers and other projects, and maybe do some other things to, you know, tell, like right now I'm working on, I'm doing a fan fiction anthology where fans can do fan fiction of my story. So any of my stories they've read, they can use the characters and the places and stuff and make their own short stories. And then we're going to put it in an anthology, and then we're going to put that online on Amazon. And then that money is going to go to the Semper Fi Fund, which is for wounded veterans.
That's awesome. You mentioned having a teenage daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Is your daughter taken after dad? Is she starting to write?
Well, no, I have two daughters. I have a stepdaughter, my 15-year-old stepdaughter. Then I have a soon-to-be 16-year-old, my biological daughter, and that's the one. The 16-year-old, the one who's my daughter, she has Asperger's syndrome, which is it's a form of autism. It's kind of on the autism spectrum.
Yeah.
So even though she's 16, you know, developmentally, like when you talk to her, sometimes you seem like you're talking to like a 10-year-old with certain things. So that's why I wrote the book Blood Slayer, which is about an autistic teenage girl, and she becomes a vampire hunter because due to her Asperger's, the vampires can't hypnotize her because her brain works differently, so she can get closer to them, you know, because if humans, they hypnotize and they turn them into slaves and all this other stuff, where she can't be hypnotized, so she can get close enough to them to fight them and stuff. So so she really liked the story. But she doesn't really write. She kind of used to write on her own. She used to do some drawing, too. She's really good. She likes video games, and she's always playing video games, but she's really good with technology stuff. So you hand her any kind of electronic device that it could be something that nobody's ever seen before, and within, like, you know, 15 minutes, she's got it mastered. So.
Yeah.
Well, of all your books, which is your favorite that you've written so far? Do you have one?
People always ask me, well, you know, I like all of them, and it's tricky because I was kind of, you know, for each one, I was kind of at a different place, for each one, and every time I finish a book, I always feel like, you know, that one's better than the one I did before. I don't know. Let me see. Favorite such a subject. I mean, a lot of people love my new one, Spankenstein. I was worried people were going to think it was really stupid because it's really got a lot of dark humor in it. But I guess it ended up working a lot better than I thought. See, it's hard for me to come up with a favorite because I'm usually... And this is where, you know, I've met a lot of writers who, a lot of them, and maybe this is just a front they put on, but, and I've run into a few that, you know, they're like, they think their books are the most brilliant thing, like, ever. I constantly think my stuff sucks, and I have beta readers that kind of give me feedback, and I'm always like, this book completely sucks, doesn't it? They're like, no, this is awesome, I love this. I'm like, what, really, are you serious? I think it's crap. But, you know, once again, that's kind of one of the things that drives me, I guess, and I'm always trying to be better because I always think everything sucks that I do. I mean, Hacked was one of my breakout books. It was one of my bestsellers, but it was so simple to write, but it was so fun because at the time it was probably one of my most brutal stories. So that was that one. I really enjoyed, you know, working on that one. Let's see, it was another Psychoville. That's probably my most brutal one. And that was one of the first ones where I had it to where fans could pay to, like, purchase a spot in the book as a character to get killed. And I was amazed because I had 10 spots for victims, and they sold out within, like, a day or two. And so these people that I know, and some were friends, some were people that I talked to on Facebook pretty regularly and going through and killing them
so
off in the story.
Yeah, so basically I could make Christy a victim is what you're saying.
Well, yeah, so, like, you know, if you know, and the way I do it is that I have some basic, simple, it's not really expensive. If you want to just be killed in the book, it's $20 for basically that slot, and then you'll get a PDF of the book before it's released, and you'll be an actual character. usually your character is going to have lines, and then you're going to die some type of horrible, terrible death, you know, in the story.
I'll be killed
and then,
by a ghost when I'm trying to hunt it.
What's that?
I said I'll be killed by a ghost while I'm trying to stalk it.
There you go. You know, so, and then, you know, it's, and then they have another package where for $40 they get all that, but then they also get a signed copy of the book when it comes out. So, some people just get the 20 just for the, just to be in the book, and others pay for the signed copy. So they can have the actual book to show their family and everything that they're a character in the book. So, so that was pretty, it was pretty fun to do it that way. And I've done it for a couple of them. For Alien Bounty Hunter, I did it, because of the nature of the story and there's so many different directions I had it going in, I couldn't guarantee that they're going to get killed. I'm like, you're probably going to be an alien and you're probably going to look weird. You may or may not get killed. If you don't get killed, I mean, that's just, I can't kill off everybody in the story, but, so yeah, I got a few good spots in that one. I think, and that one, I'm working on Alien Bounty Hunter. It's about a girl who's obviously, she's in space. She's an alien bounty hunter. And she gets attacked by these pirates, these space pirates, over this data card that she gets on her person that she doesn't realize she has after she kills this guy. And there's some info on it that the repressive government has. And they leave her for dead and all this other stuff. So she has to go through this, like, she goes through this medical ship that repairs her. And they do, like, these enhancements. Like, they put, almost like a titanium implant on the side of her face to make her face look pearly blue. But she's got, like, a infrared artificial eye that helps her with targeting and some other stuff, and she's got her own kind of weird weapon that's called, it's like a whip, but the whip is like, I call it a triangle because it's shaped like a triangle when she's not using it, and then she turns it on and it folds out like a whip, and the whip part gets like white hot, and so when she hits something it like just burns right through it or whatever, and then she can throw it like a boomerang and stuff like that. So it's that was kind of, I like making up my own, almost all my stories, I try to make up like my own weapon of some kind, just because it's kind of fun to do that, and it makes it different than if you're just using a knife or something like that. So
yeah.
So that's the gist of Alien Bounty Hunter. So she's going around trying to track these guys down and all this other stuff. When she, as she comes across them, she gradually, you know, tortures and kills a bunch of them, and so, but yeah, it's been kind of fun describing some of these folks as weird creatures and having like four arms or, you know, three eyes or green, or one guy had a big long snake-like penis with two heads on the end and all this other stuff. Yeah.
Now,
do you ever get writer's
hunter?
What's that?
The Alien Bounty Hunter one, have you ever thought about turning that into like a series, or is that just going to be a single novel?
Well, I've done one series. I did a series called the April Almighty series, and this is about a girl that she had this kind of special ability to control people's minds. And then in each story, she comes across a different set of, you know, bad guys, or a couple stories, she had evil clowns that she was after, and another, there's these bounty hunters that are coming after her. So, different scenario. And I found by the third book, it was getting really hard, because you got to maintain continuity. So I'd have to go back to the first book and look, you know, okay, what was this character's name, or what did this guy look like again? Cause I'd bring him back in the next book, and same with the locations and everything. And, just trying to keep it going. So I did that for four books, and I kind of ended it. People have wanted to see other series from some of the other books. My book, The Curse of the Gut Ripper, it's like a slasher story. I kind of put some weird spins on that one. People want to see another one. I've kind of thought about maybe doing some different ones. That one, I would have some room to invest with doing new ones. So it could be like a franchise type stories without necessarily being sequels per se. You know, I thought of doing that with some of the other ones, but what I tend to do more than anything, I kind of write within the bigger universe. So like, for example, in my book Family Night, which is about a family of cannibals, there's a strip club that they go there where they kidnap one of their victims called the Chesty Chola in San Antonio. And it's not a real place. I made it up. But the Chesty Chola appears probably in three or four different of my books. Same with different characters. I have a character from Road to Darkness that shows up
in April Rains. I've got character from Lady Cannibal that shows up at Escape from Happy Town. So, you know what I mean? So just kind of within that universe, these different people popping up in different locations and things like that. So, you know, I even kind of make reference to it in Frankenstein where guys got a weird name and they're like, hey, aren't you part of those guys up in that town? And I'm referencing the April books, even though there's nothing directly tying it to that, just kind of a loose mention of it. In Clown Apocalypse, the main character is like a grown-up, like a former child movie star. And the movie he was in was he played the little boy in the movie Family Night, which was one of my books. And he's at a horror convention now. He's like all washed up and looking for work and whatever. So just little weird things like that I like to do. Just readers get a kick out of it, and it's kind of a reward for folks, you know, that like to read all the other stuff. Because, you know, when you find an Easter egg, you're like, oh, yeah, yeah. You know, I try to do it like that and keep it subtle and keep it kind of fun. I don't want it to turn in like I read some books that are series or whatever, but each book is kind of almost like a commercial for their other books. I keep mentioning all their other books and stuff, and I'm like, well, I don't want it to be like that. I want it to be a fun experience for people. So,
well, let's take a quick 4-minute break, and when we get back, let's hit on your collection of short stories, the fairy tales, the classic fairy tales.
Oh, okay.
I think that'd be awesome to hit on. All right.
All right.
We'll be back.
Okay.
Welcome back. If you're just now tuning in, we're talking to horror author Tim Miller. Tim, before we went to break, I'd mentioned the collection of short stories that you have. It's mm-hmm. kind of like a take on the classic fairy tales. What inspired you to take these? Like, there's, I'm guessing because you've got Big Bad Wolf, that's a spinoff of Little Red Riding Hood, and you've got Snow White.
Yeah, I'd seen other authors doing it with, like, zombies and stuff and a few other things, and I thought, I kind of had the idea. The first idea was just doing a short story I did with Alice in Wonderland, and I released that on its own called We're All Mad Here, and I just released it as a short story. It's about 10,000 words or so. And the original idea was to maybe do one every few weeks and then maybe put them all together later. I did that one. I did Big Bad Wolf and released that on its own. And then I just got sidetracked. It was almost a year. I kind of got sidetracked with it or whatever. But then in recent months, people were asking me about more fairy tales and when are they going to get more fairy tales, and they really like those too, and they want to get some more. So I went ahead and I kept We're All Mad Here live because that was pretty popular when it's longer. I took Big Bad Wolf down off Amazon, and then I went ahead and I wrote like four more stories, I think three or four more stories, and then we're going to put them all in one collection. So you can get We're All Mad Here as a standalone just by itself, or you can get the whole big book for it'll be $2.99 on Kindle if you have Kindle Unlimited, and it's free on Kindle Unlimited. But the stories I go over in that are, let's see, Snow White, Sleeping Beauty, and Beauty and the Beast. And is there one more, or is that it?
Little Red Riding Hood.
Well, that's Big Bad Wolf.
Oh.
That's big. Okay. So you're going to have, so the whole thing will consist of We're All Mad Here, Big Bad Wolf, and then the Snow White one is called Snow White and the Pissed Off Dwarfs. Sleeping Beauty
Love
is called Narcoleptic Beauty. And so yeah, Sleeping Beauty is called Narcoleptic Beauty. And Beauty and the Beast is called Beauty and Bestiality.
Oh,
wow.
So.
That's funny. Now, with your other books,
lots of,
you work like
to
an, you work to like an outline or plot like with your other books, or do you just see where the idea takes you?
I kind of, all my books, I really don't have a whole lot. I mean, I kind of start out, I mean, when I get the idea, I'll kind of jot down a paragraph or two of kind of what the overall arc of the book's going to be. If I really, like if I'm already in the middle of working something else, but I got a lot going on with this other idea is really working itself, I might write out the first chapter just to kind of get, so I know when I get back to it, so I have a starting point. But usually I don't do a lot of plotting. I've tried it before and it's hard for me. I literally just make shit up as I go, and I might go back and tweak it. I know like Gut Ripper, I changed the ending because some of my beta readers just really felt the ending was unsatisfying. So I went back and changed it, and I feel made it way, way better. I've done that a few times in a few books, or there may be usually something a lot, but it's just a scene here, ending there, or intro there that I go back to change to make it different, try to make it a little bit better. You know, for the April series, a lot of people didn't like the way the April series ended. I got really mixed responses. Some people thought it was a great way to end it. Others, I was getting hate mail about how I ended it. So I did all four books, and I put all four books into a single collection, so you can get all four books individually, or you can get the single collection that I put them all four in one volume. And then I wrote an alternate ending. So you can read all four books and read the original ending, and then you can go and read the alternate ending if you want to do that, and then you can kind of pick in your head, you know, which ending of the series that you like better. So it's kind of a
you have a lot of neat ideas and twists and stuff with your books.
Yeah, I try to always do, like, if I have books that are released individually and I put them in a collection, I try to add something. I know the alternate ending, it's not huge. I mean, it was a chapter, so it was about, you know, four or five pages or whatever. Some people wanted both and were excited for it. Some people thought that I was trying to just get extra money. I'm like, I put this stuff on Kindle Unlimited, so people don't have to pay all this money for
You know, if you're paying $10 a month, you can download all these books for free, and then I get paid by Amazon for, you know, every page that everybody reads, I get paid for that. So
I was going to ask you about
there.
That. Yeah, I'm a Kindle Unlimited person.
Yeah, the page, it's a lot of people use it that read a lot. I mean, if you read more than 4 or 5 books a month, then it's definitely worth it. You know, my books are short.
Yeah.
So now the payout, and there's a lot of controversy about it, the payout Amazon gives you for having books in Unlimited isn't nearly as good as what it is for sales. But it does help your ranking. They adjusted their algorithm so Kindle Unlimited books get ranked higher. So if I get a book sale within like a certain – like if I have a couple sales within a few hours, you know, my ranking will go up a little. But if I get a if I get one or two borrows, my ranking will go up – my ranking will have a nice big jump if it's a borrow a sale. So they do that just because they want – because being Kindle Unlimited, your book has to be exclusive only on Amazon. So that's kind of their way of, I think, of just kind of – maintaining more products and market share than the other competitors. I've tried breaking away. Other authors have said to do that. I've done it. Where I didn't release some of my new ones in Kindle Limited, and for about 4 or 5 months, I put all my books on all the different outlets, and I don't know if I made $20 on any of the other outlets altogether. So in that whole 4 months, I mean, I was maybe selling one or two books on all the other sites at a time. So I put them back on Amazon, put them back to Kindle Limited. You know, it's kind of a trade-off. You don't make as much from the borrows, but those rankings is what helps your visibility. The higher your books rank, the more people are going to see it, and the more Amazon's going to push it. So,
well, you know, I discovered a whole lot of authors through Kindle Unlimited that I would have never looked for before. Yeah, just because I could try them for free, you know. And so, I mean,
yeah.
I've got a whole lot of favorites now because of Kindle Unlimited. So I see where it would help in there.
Well, exactly, and I was leaving my backlist. I was putting my new ones not in Unlimited and putting my backlist and leaving my backlist in so people could find me and read my old books. If they like them, they could buy my new ones. I couldn't tell. I mean, really, 4 or 5 months, it seemed like my Amazon sales were doing really well, but they kind of were gradually dwindling after a few months. So, you know, I know you had the holidays, and you know, so it could be all kinds. It's really hard to tell the book market. It's hard to tell what factors are what. February has been kind of slow all around. Yeah, so a lot of people, they kind of use that. Now, the downside with it, when you write horror like me, like extreme horror, like somebody might see my book, like they read a book by, I don't know, say Blake Crouch, who, you know, he wrote the that TV show that was just on last year. I can't think of it off the top of my head now. Wayward Pines. He wrote Wayward Pines, which is more like suspense, horror, science fiction-y, creepy type, whatever. And so, like, say my Kindle Unlimited book, one of my books, like say Hell Texas, you know, or say Psychoville. I'm just using that example. Say Psychoville shows up under the also bought category. You know what that is? You know what I'm talking about? Like you're looking at Blake Crouch's book, and under this, say customers who bought this also bought Psychoville by Tim Miller. That might be one of the books listed. So you got Kindle Unlimited. You're like, oh, okay, this looks like I'm going to read this. And then they read it, and there's parts in there about people getting raped with a strap-on dildo that has a blowtorch built in. There's a mutant-looking guy running around with a chainsaw. There's a satanic cult sacrificing people. There's people making snuff films. So then I could tell when that happens because I get this wave of, like, one-star reviews of these folks that had no idea what they were getting into, and they read my book. When they weren't in Kindle Unlimited, I didn't get as many bad reviews because it was only actual extreme fans that were buying my books. You get more casual people checking out your books with Kindle Unlimited, which is great, but yeah, if they don't like it, then you can end up with a whole wave of really bad reviews. But for the extreme fans, those kind of reviews don't really hurt me because extreme fans, you know, if I'm looking for an extreme horror book and I'm like, huh, I wonder if this book's gory enough, and I read reviews like, oh my god, this is the most disgusting thing I've ever read, and I had to have therapy after reading it, and this author needs to just never write anything again, and then I'm like, okay, I'm getting this book because this sounds like it's right up my alley. So,
well, can you not put like a disclaimer at the very beginning of the book, explaining how graphic and how gory the book is? If you're not into it, don't read it. Because I mean, I've had books
authors
that have said that,
I know,
and
authors
I'm like,
that
okay,
do that.
Well, I'm not interested.
I know a lot of authors. I've seen a lot of authors do it. I've always felt, for me, when I read that on books, to me it felt like a gimmick, like it's just another way to try to pull people in, of, oh, what's so, and I was always afraid of if I did that and the book didn't live up, if the book wasn't gory enough, because I've seen that happen,
where they put a disclaimer on it and the book's just not graphic enough. And then they get one-star reviews from the real extreme fans going, this book sucks. There wasn't hardly any gore in this at all, or wasn't nearly graphic enough or whatever. So, but if you've seen my covers, a lot of my covers, well, first off, Psychoville, it's got a girl who's like a kind of a heavy metal chick leaning up against the wall. She's looking all evil and scary looking. And the book is called Psychoville. So, and then I have kind of a description. There is kind of a synopsis of snuff films and other things that are happening in the story.
Yeah.
So, like, I had one bad review where the guy said the prose seemed childish and the book was filled with unnecessary violence. And, I mean, I don't respond to reviews, but I showed my wife that. I was like, well, the book's called Psychoville, so there's that for his flowing prose that he's looking for. I mean, I just don't know what you expect when you pick up a book called Psychoville. I'm not sure what folks expect, you know. And then, like, for example, Spankenstein, that has a picture of a girl lying on a table with some guy, like a mad scientist dude, dismembering her. Hacked has a picture of a girl bound and gagged on the cover. So to me, the way I see it, those are kind of warnings of themselves.
Yeah, they're self-explanatory.
You know, if you see that and you're like, oh my God, there's rape and violence in this book. I'm like, well, yeah, there's a bloody girl bound and gagged on the cover. What did you think it was going to be? Unicorns? I mean,
unicorns and rainbows and puppies.
Yeah.
Now, the only one is my one book, Mr. Saki, which is about an evil sock monkey that comes to life. You know, I have a picture of a sock monkey on the cover, and I've been at shows and people buy that for their kids, and I tell them it is absolutely not for children. And they're like, oh no. Some are like, oh, it's okay. I'm like, it is. But I've had people that bought it and read it, and they're like, oh, that's supposed to be a cute story about a talking sock monkey, and he's out raping people, and the sock monkey, he doesn't actually hurt anyone. He tells his little boy who's with from the time he grows up, he's telling him what to do, and the little boy does it because Mr. Saki doesn't want to upset Mr. Saki. So, I mean, he does, I mean, really awful, awful things. I mean, cuts people up and strangles people and just all sorts of mayhem and stuff. But there's some twists in there to explain kind of what's going on at the end and whatever. I always thought sock monkeys were kind of creepy, but I like them. So I always thought that'd be a fun story to do an evil sock monkey. So that's one where, you know, people read it. But even then, I had a review on Mr. Saki where a guy left a one-star review, and it said, I've seen Tip Miller's other books, and I've read the descriptions and seen the reviews of how graphic they are, but I went ahead and checked the book out anyway. However, I was totally unprepared for exactly how graphic his books are because I had no idea any living person could think that way.
I was going to ask you if you have nightmares from your books.
Well, no, actually, it's weird because my books, like Curse of the Gut Ripper, was kind of inspired by a weird dream that I had. I can't really explain it too much without, but the dream was about Michael Myers. I was being chased by a slasher, and it was Michael Myers, and then I kind of got away, and then some other stuff happened and whatever, and I thought, that is really trippy. That would make a cool story. But, you know, I can't just write a Michael Myers story, and I can't sell it. I don't own the rights, and I kind of didn't really do much with it. And it's been about a year or so, and it was kind of bugging me again. I'm like, you know what? I'm just going to make up my own slasher, and I'm just going to make my own story with it. So that's what I ended up doing. It ended up being a pretty fun story. If you like slasher books, it's a good one. It's not a typical slasher story. I've read so many books that they're like, oh, you know, our new take on the slasher genre. And once again, it's hard for me to explain it without spoiling it. So I think a lot of people, you know, it sells pretty well. It doesn't sell as good as some of my other ones. I think some people think it's just going to be a lame slasher book because that's kind of how I started out, but I throw the twist around the middle. But it's kind of, yeah, it's just, I don't know, it's just different. That's the tricky part when you have these twists is how to promote it without giving too much of it away.
Yeah.
Tim, as an author, do you have an author that you consider a mentor, someone that you look up to their work?
Never really a mentor.
By?
I mean, there was a guy who helped me out a lot when I first got started. His name was Jim Blue. This was back in 2000 when I first was publishing, like, my crime fiction stuff or whatever.
He lived in Indiana, not far from me. He was an older guy, and he kind of went through my first manuscript, and he was really encouraging because he kind of left me some notes on it as to what I could fix. But one of the coolest things he told me when he got it back, he goes, first off, he said, this book isn't ready for publishing. He goes, I made a lot of notes as to what the things were. He said, the good side is, all the issues that I've come across are things that are easily fixable. He said, there's a lot of writers that they just don't have what it takes, and it's just, they finished their first book and it's going to take too much work. He said, you have got that voice. And he's like, you've definitely got the gift. He said, you just need to develop it and keep working on it. So that's what really encouraged me. I'd lost touch with him, and then after my first book came out, I tried to look him up, and I found out he passed away a couple years ago. So I was kind of sad. But he's probably the closest thing to a mentor I ever had. I have a lot of other authors that I kind of look up to. I follow them on Facebook and stuff, but I don't really converse with them that much. I just sort of follow them that way and what's going on. I think their books are great, and some of them, they know that I write. And it's kind of weird because there's a couple who, someone said, oh, you ought to ask him if he wants to read your book, and I'm like, I don't want him to read my book. because there's one of them especially, I love his books, but yet I also see his posts about other books that he reads and other horror movies, and he's really, really, really picky about stuff that he likes. So I'm like, he's probably going to hate my stuff, and if I have him read my book, and he freaking hates it, then I'll be completely crushed. So I'd rather he just not read it at all. Or if he does read it, don't tell me that he read it and tell me, or whatever. Yeah. So I'd rather just read his books and follow his posts and just kind of leave it at that. We're not really buddy. I've commented on his post. You know what I mean? It's just like it's casual Facebook friends. You know what I mean? We haven't talked any real length or anything. So there's a couple that are like that. What's really weird, there's a few who I read their books and I was really just blown away by the work. And so they inspired some of my books. And now I see some of those guys, and I don't know, it could be a lot of things. They're just not publishing as much anymore for whatever reason. They're not on social media that much. And I see like some of my newer books have more reviews and higher rankings than the book that I read of theirs that really motivated me and inspired me. So, and that's not, I'm not like bragging or whatever. It's just kind of a thing. It's like, you know, I read this book, you know, 3 or 4 years ago and thought, wow, I would love to write anything remotely this brilliant one day. Not saying that my stuff is the most brilliant. I'm just saying I would love to write something that's good. And now here, 4 or 5 years later, I've got a couple books that I've got people saying the same thing about my books. And some of those, you know, are ranking higher and have more reviews than some of those books that inspired me did. And it's not a contest. It's just, it's kind of just a surreal thing to see that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, to see this person's book that you like try to aspire to. And then you see that you have work that's, you know, at least from a sales standpoint and popularity standpoint for at least whatever, it seems to be, you know, surpassing the other ones. And so it's kind of a weird, feeling, but, And that's where, you know, this trying to, with it being a business for me and trying to always do my best and better myself, I'll write a book and even I'll kind of think this occasionally, like when I did Hacked in Psychoville Hacked in Dollhouse, especially Dollhouse was one of my creepier stories. Both those books, I kind of felt like I was onto something very special with it. You know what I mean? It was everything was flowing really good. I was on a roll and I just was coming up with some really weird stuff I'd never done before. And I was like, people are going to really freak the fuck out when they read this stuff. It's going to be awesome. And they go out there, the sales do great, and I get great reviews, and people love it and whatever. But then my next, you know, I get excited about that, but then I'm like, well, fuck, how am I going to top that now?
Do you ever end up with, like, writer's block? And if you do, do you have any tips for other people to get through it?
Not really. I mean, I get some times where when you're working on a story and there's places in the story, like when you get like towards the middle of the story, for me, that's the toughest part. And when you're transitioning out of the middle and into the final conflict, those are the hardest parts. So I don't really get writer's block. I'm just not sure where to go with those or how to flesh it out too much. So, sometimes I just take a day or two away from it. And just try not to think about it for a little bit. I try to read I'm trying to read more. I got away from reading. I used to read all the time. I've gotten away from it. I try to force myself to read at various times throughout the day, at least, you know, at least 20 to 50 pages of something I try to read. And then that kind of helps jog my memory a little bit, kind of loosens my brain up. You know, usually doing that.
Right,
a lot of that, once again, what's that?
What are you reading right now? What's on your nightstand?
Right now I am reading Retreat by J.F. Gonzalez.
That horror?
Yeah, it's horror. J.F. Gonzalez, he wrote one of the best books I ever read called Survivor, which is about a woman who was kidnapped by this ring of guys making snuff films. And the book, there are so many messed up things that happened in that book. I can't even describe it, but it was just a really brilliant book. And he passed away of cancer about 2 years ago. And he had a couple of unfinished books. And I guess he was very good friends with Brian Keene and a couple other authors. And so with the permission of his wife, of Jesus' wife, I guess, Brian Keene has been finishing some of those books. He helped finish up Retreat. Retreat was mostly done. I guess Brian just had to tweak it and have it edited, whatever. So they put that book out. That's his first posthumous release. And I guess they have a couple other, like, sequels to some of the other stories that he'd already started on or that were partway done or mostly done, and whatever. But I really enjoyed Survivor, so I started Retreat. I'm pretty early into it, but it's pretty good so far. I'm not entirely sure. It's some kind of weird country club run by rich assholes. And there's a missing girl from another company that's missing. So I'm not really to where things have actually started unfolding yet, but you know something bad's about to happen. So that's a good spot.
Yeah. Well, we're getting close to the hour, Tim. I hate to say that. But before we do start wrapping, I wanted to hit on upcoming events that you have. I noticed you got the Permian Basin coming up. I went to that last year.
Mm-hmm.
That was fun. Alamo City, tons of stuff. And going to give you a minute to, you know, talk about your website and where people can, you know, buy your books again, all that kind of stuff.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, my website is timmiller.org. Once you're on my website, I have links on there to my Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I'm pretty active on all of those. If you follow me on Facebook on my fan page, I do live videos once in a while where I'm just doing something goofy, or I'll show you what I'm writing or working on, or I just talk to people. Y'all can ask me questions, you know, live, and I can respond right there to you. Twitter, I'm always posting stuff. Instagram, I'm always posting horror-related. It's not all book stuff. I always try to just post fun content, horror-related stuff, and things like that. My website, I've got if you click the store button on my website, if you want to be a character in my book, you can click on the links there. It has different options for different packages for if you want to get killed in one of my books or be a character. If you want to buy signed copies, there's links there. All my books are on Amazon. They're exclusively on Amazon. So they're on Kindle and Kindle Unlimited. So if you have Kindle Unlimited, which is like Netflix for books, kind of, you know, you can download all my books at once. Or most of my books are $2.99 if you're going to buy them outright. The collections are a little bit more. Collections run from $4.99 to $5.99. But those, you're getting three or four books at once. So that's most of what I got going on. And, yeah, if you're in Texas or the South Texas area, you know, I've got a lot of appearances coming up. I've got two in March. Permian Basin in Odessa. I'm going to be in Corpus Christi in June. I got a couple others that are pending. I'm just waiting to hear more from. Alamo City is a great big Comic Con here in San Antonio. If you're in the area, I'll be that one also. So yeah, I mean, everybody's always welcome to stop by my website. You know, follow me on Twitter, follow me on Facebook, send me a message, tweet something silly at me, and I'm usually pretty good at replying to messages. You know, unless you're asking me to read your book, it's not that I'm against reading new authors' books. I don't have a lot of time, and I have a lot of folks kind of wanting me to like mentor or coach them. And I just don't have time to do it. And so I don't want to tell everyone that, you know, tell somebody I'm going to read it and that I don't have time to do it or I get behind or whatever. So that's other than that, but I always love hearing from fans and people, you know, tell me that, you know, hey, I heard you on the radio or whatever. So.
Yeah. I've noticed you reply a lot to your fans. Very active.
Mm-hmm.
And are you going to be in Glen Rose in March for that Perry Unity Festival? Okay. Well, maybe I'll see you at a different one then. Okay. All right. Well,
are you going to be
Permian
Basin this time?
You. I'm not.
Okay.
How far is it from? I'll have to check into that. Now that I'm in Austin, I don't know. Probably not.
Oh yeah, it's about 3 or 4 hours.
Okay. Yeah. Probably not. I'll probably see you in Houston if you're going to the one in Houston.
Oh, okay.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on. It's been good having you. Always good talking to you.
All right. Well, thanks for having me.
And, yeah. No, anytime. We'll have you on again sometime, and I'll see you at an event soon. And thanks,
all right,
guys,
sounds
for
good.
Tuning in. All right. See you next Sunday, guys.
All right.
Bye. Just send me.